Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for October 25th in the year 2022. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If those others on the call want to say their names so people listening along later can associate a name to the voice, now is a good time to do that.
Hello, I'm Sean Allen.
Hello, I'm Rhett Davis.
All right, and on we go. That's the crew. So let's take a look at the auto-generated agenda for today. Beginning in the RFC's repo, we have RFC number 201, introduce empty ranges. There has been some back and forth on this RFC, including some comments from Sean, Ryan, and Red. Ryan has recently said, "I see nothing objectionable." Red, do you have any up-to-date feedback, or Sean?
I'm putting my feedback now, which is I haven't had time to look at this at all. Apologies, long, drawn-out work project. I might have time in November, certainly. Certainly not before. Apology.
Read anything from you on this RFC?
Nope. I'm happy.
Okay. Well, you should mash that like button. just to make it clear that your comments have been resolved.
Here would be my question: is this a breaking change?
Good question.
I do not believe so, no.
So, well,
how do you define breaking change, Sean?
Okay, well, it's two things. One, will it change some existing behavior? I assume yes. That somebody could be doing something where currently it does X and it'll then do Y from this.
Yeah, I think it definitely, yes. It definitely does, because there, if you look at the line numbers around line 222, there's a heading called examples of affected ranges. So here are existing ranges and examples of they were previously marked as infinite, and they are now marked as false. Like the is infinite function will return false, and is empty will return true. So it is a change in behavior, but arguably a change in bad behavior.
Do you think this PR is a good idea? Do you think this change is a good idea, Joe?
I'm going to take a couple seconds here to refresh myself before I answer. I think the answer is yes, but I'm going to quickly read from the drawback section allowed here for the call. This is a breaking change. Any existing code that relies on currently infinite iterators that under this RFC are no longer infinite, which are most, would not function properly. Any code that, for example, in place of while true do instead of a while true loop, if they use for range for I in range of 0 divided by 0, F64 0 divided by 0. So like if somebody was doing that awful piece of code, if they had a NaN range. So it would no longer work as they intended. I certainly would not intend for it to work the way it currently does. Likewise, there could be an expectation that any range containing NaN or positive, negative, infinite bounds or step parameters would for sure produce never-ending iterations of a single value, such as NaN or inf. And the fact that many of such ranges would now produce zero iterations might be confusing to some. However, it's also fair to point out this behavior. Endless iterations of a single value can easily be achieved by other means, such as using iter tools. the current implementation also provides an isInfinite function to test whether the iterator will indefinitely return values. This function could be currently in use to avoid iterating over ranges that might be infinite or to produce appropriate errors. Since this RFC reduces the number of cases in which ranges are infinite, this might produce side effects in existing code, even if that code does not purposely use infinite ranges as control structures, like the first example. This could, for example, prevent certain error messages from getting displayed that were used in combination with such tests. It's, on the other hand, fair to state that a search of public pony code on GitHub did not yield any uses of isInfinite outside test code associated with the test for the range implementation. This could be taken as a sign that infinite ranges and guarding code against their effects are not widely used. It is also worth noting that isInfinite will still return true for all remaining infinite range cases, so that any use as a guard should likely remain intact. Yeah, so I think this is a good change. To me, it is breaking, but it is breaking behavior that I and probably Stefan D consider buggy.
Okay, I'm going to say what I'm putting in the comment here. All right. Okay. One, just verbally for the record, that was an incredibly awesome drawback section. I love it. I hope that everybody in the future that we can point them to that drawback section as a great thing for, this is a really awesome drawback section, and you should aim to be as good as this one, right? I'm sure people could do even better, but that was awesome. That was amazing. I feel really good with that. Based on hearing that drawback section out loud, Joe, and the fact that you did spend more time on this, well, which is really easy. You spent time on this in where I haven't had a chance to, and you're in favor of it and hearing the drawback section. I give my support for this with, you know, the caveat that I haven't really read it, but from the drawbacks and your support, it sounds like a good thing to me.
Okay. Should we mark it as final comment period?
I think so.
All right. I'm removing the discuss during sync label. I am adding the final comment period label.
Okay, and it's going to add
the status new.
I will remove that label again in a moment when it adds it.
Okay.
Because I just I left the comment.
Okay.
On it.
And yeah, Red, I would encourage you to mash that approve button too if you're in front of a computer. If you're not in front, it's okay. But yeah.
Will do.
Moving on, we have PonyC pull request number 4201, speed up runtime on Windows. This is one that's marked GMC. Any thoughts on this? I don't have any thoughts on it. Okay, so I'm going to read it. Currently, the Windows lowest CPU time is set to 1 millisecond, which is 10 times longer than on other platforms. Windows, particularly when running tests, is also noticeably slower than other platforms. I think this regular 10x longer pause can, over time, roll up into things taking much longer on Windows. I believe it's better to yield too little rather than too much. So you had me until that last statement, Sean. If we're decreasing the yield time, then we would be yielding more frequently?
No, this is how long we yield for.
Right.
If you look at the change, it is, so we will, a scheduler thread will pause for a minimum of 1 millisecond for a yield on Windows versus 100 microseconds on all other platforms.
Okay. And this is when it has no work, basically, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I understood that from the start, but go ahead.
It eventually, over time, if there's still no work, it rolls up into a longer value, which is then the same across all platforms. It's only this initial little pause, which is different.
Okay.
But if we hit the little pause a lot, cumulatively, it's over time for tons of stuff, it could potentially get rather large because we're just always doing 10x. So the next one up, by the way, where we wait longer on other platforms is 1 millisecond.
Okay, so it's what Windows already was. I was about to say something that is now invalidated by what you just said. Because I was about to say, like, the counterpoint would be, if we don't yield for long enough, then we roll up to the higher yield amount without first, like, yeah, it could be actually time lost. Like, if the next yield time were like 10 milliseconds or something, then you could make an argument that in certain cases this would slow things down. But since the next step up is 1 millisecond, then I agree. There's not much downside here except for more power consumption, possibly, which is,
yeah,
if you're if you're using Pony, I think you want that power consumption. That's fair to say.
I will say I can from explaining this, I want to, I certainly, before this would get merged, would want to update the comments, right, to be more clear about what is going on. But if you're in favor of it, that would be, hey, I can do that.
Yes, I am. I'm just going to mark the approve button, and if you want to change the comment, you can. All right, so moving on to 4199, fix broken read line package. With the release of 0.49.0, we changed ANSI.erase to be erasing left rather than right. This made sense based on the comment on the ANSI.erase method. However, the actual usage in the standard library of ANSI.erase was expecting it to erase to the right. Because of this change, the read line support in the term package has been broken. This commit switches erase back to erasing to the right, and in process fixes the read line package. The comment on erase has been updated to reflect what it actually does. Supporting erasing to the left and right seems valuable, but I'm not addressing it. It's not here. Instead, leaving that as an RFC. Okay, yeah, that's reasonable.
Yep. And there is Brad and I have discussed it some, and I'd love your feedback in the RFC channel on the Zulip Joe. For what the approaches that we want to do, and then I can write the RFC to decide, like, what we want to do.
Okay, this is in the RFC's chat. ANSI erase left. Okay, yeah, I hadn't looked at this yet. That was a couple days ago. Okay.
In addition, I also searched through all of GitHub for any other usage of, you know, ANSI clear, and nobody else is using it. So. Or is it anti-clear or anti-erase, whichever one it is.
Erase.
Yeah. I get confused because there's two different terminologies depending on whether you're talking about ANSI or VT100. So, yeah.
I'm in favor of the same option you're in favor of, Sean, in that discussion in the Zulip.
Which one am I in favor of?
The... add erase left, or sorry. Never mind. I'm not sure I am. I read the bullet points wrong, so I'm glad you asked. Add erase. I actually didn't see the last bullet point. So update erase to take a value that defaults to right, but also it works for left. This would
as Red pointed out, there's a third option, which is to erase the entire line. There's three, which are erase, three different erase values.
Yeah. When you say this would introduce two new primitives for left/right, I'm hoping mm-hmm. that you're not planning to. Oh, I guess you probably are planning that.
they would be primitives that are in the term package.
That yes. are named left and right. Yeah. Okay.
Or erase left, erase light, erase line, something like that. Yeah.
I'd be a lot happier with the latter. Yeah.
What, erase underscore? Or I mean, not erase underscore, but erase left, erase right, erase
yes.
center.
Yeah. Yes.
The names, I'm not wedded to anything. It's just I try to enumerate different possibilities for how we could approach it.
Okay. Yeah, so clear line versus erase. Yeah, okay, so yeah, I agree. Three primitives.
Okay. I will write, if you put drop a comment on that. Yep, I see the comment went in. I will work on an RFC for that.
Cool. Let's take a look at the next item on the auto-generated agenda. Pull request 4197 update to Google benchmark 1.7.0.
We can skip that.
Yeah, we're still blocked there. Okay.
Yep. And this should be, I don't know why this isn't, it was supposed to be a draft. I'm not sure how it, apparently I accidentally never created it as not a draft. Interesting. Okay. I have updated it to be a draft.
Cool. All right. So moving on to 4191, attempt to fix potential compiler seg fault in lookup.c. This has had, okay, so we don't know if it's ready for review.
Yep.
And it's marked draft, so it's assumedly not ready for review. So I'll skip over that one. Unless anyone has anything comments on it, we'll move on to 4185, update supported FreeBSD to 13.1.
This is this can't be done until the Google Bench thing is addressed in some type of way.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Moving on to issue ticket 4195, Pony 0.51.3 fails to build with Clang 15.0.1. This is Google benchmark. So we talked about, Sean, we talked about vendored Clang, using that to build Google benchmark. I think we're currently caught up on issues with the C runtime, C++ runtime, on vendored Clang not being pointing in the right spot.
Yeah. So for folks who aren't aware of it, the general ideas, and this goes to something that we have discussed many times in the past, is to use the system compiler to build stuff from the LLVM package, in particular the Clang from that package, and then only using that single compiler Clang to build everything else for the Pony one, so that we're not playing whack-a-mole with trying to support many different compilers for building our dependencies, et cetera, and everything. And we only have to support the one compiler and its errors, et cetera, and everything else, and generally making things much easier. And then leaning on Clang being able to be built with whatever the system compiler is for where there is potential pain, but which should create much less pain for us as maintainers overall. And that comes up here with Google benchmarks not building with a particular Clang version which somebody has as their system compiler. Is that a reasonable summation, Joe? Did I miss anything?
Yeah. Okay. And then the current, so Gordon has done some work to that end, and the current stumbling block is stuff with the built Clang not being able to find the right C/C++ runtime stuff. And there's some CMake magic that probably needs to happen there. I've run into similar issues when I've tried to do a multi-phase build of LLVM, in which you build LLVM and Clang once, and then you use that Clang to build LLVM and Clang again. With the goal being a more optimized LLVM. So like turning on things like profile guided optimization, all that kind of complicated stuff. Anyway, yes, CMake magic. It was beyond me when I tried to do it. Hopefully it's not beyond our CMake wizard, Gordon. Yes. No pressure, Gordon. So moving on to 4175, pointers to uninitialized memory via array.cpointer and string.cpointer. Also, I see we have...
is basically... Should we just leave the discuss on sync on here to keep reminding that you, Borja, and I should get together to discuss this so that we could...
Sure.
come up with a thing. Or the original statement I had made was, as long as you two agree on something, I'll be happy with whatever, wherever it is. I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like you guys are there, right? But I'm not sure. Or if you are, then we would need it detailed so that
it's not clear. Yeah, I don't think we are clearly there. Okay. I'm trying to find the Zulip conversation about this. I don't see it linked in the ticket, and I would like to find it and link it to the ticket. Maybe it is in the ticket somewhere. Anyway, my whole deal is that you should be able to get offsets of pointers somehow if you're an FFI package developer. And right now, what we have is you can get offsets. So you can get pointers, you can get offsets, and the offsets can take you into, arbitrary memory, because you can offset by any address you choose. And that is safe in a pure pony context because of it's a tag pointer, right? But if you're using FFI, you can use the tag pointer on an FFI call, and that's kind of the path for that. I'm fine with any solution that still allows a path for somebody to work in an FFI developer package to do that. And my sort of suggestion in the comments there as an alternative option would be to have the Pony runtime provide FFI calls or FFI like intrinsics that could be used. If you have permission in your package to use FFI, then you can get offsets of pointers using those FFI or FFI like calls. And that still keeps a path open for FFI package developers while closing the hole for all other developers to the extent that there is a hole.
Okay. That makes sense. I feel like the next step with this would be when you have time, if you could write that up a little, what you imagine it would look like. And then somebody. Sorry. Yeah.
August 11th, I wrote a comment including that. Is there something missing from that comment I should include?
I did not. I don't see. This is the one from August 11th that I mentioned this to Sean in a DM conversation just now.
Yes. So I think that's the same thing I said, and I gave an example of what it could look like.
Okay, so I would say then, I think what this is ready for someone to try implementing the idea with a link to your comment, right?
Okay.
In the standard library, right? And see if it works out and if anything weird arises, right? If anything feels wrong, we should discuss before it goes to, before, you know, we should discuss as soon as something starts to feel wrong, right?
Sounds good.
Because in the end, you know, it's really working with it and implementing it, right? And seeing what happens in the standard library to see if it feels right or if there's a.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Okay. So I will drop that as a comment. I will take the needs discussion off, right?
Sounds good. So we can move on to ticket 4174. Entitled Memory Corruption via Array.copy2. Here's. So Sean, you wrote, let's you and I discuss this issue and come to a resolution so we can unblock this, and hopefully Stefan Didi is still interested in fixing it.
Yep.
Yeah, this is the one I was thinking of before that, that when I was thinking about how what we needed to talk about. So this is the one where I think Borja and I were not like really aligned in that, like, Borja gave an alternative proposal, and I think from a, so my comment on August 30th, particularly the second bullet point, is my main concern with this approach suggested by Borja, in that it would become a silently breaking change rather than a fail at compile time breaking change. So in the approach I outlined above, we'd be making copy to and copy from partial, which would force everyone to either handle the new error case or more likely switch to copy append or copy from append, because all the real world use cases I know of are doing the append case. In contrast, the approach that Borja outlined would not force any compile time failures and would instead just start failing at runtime for everyone who didn't pay attention to the release notes and update their program. So this is like, yeah.
I definitely prefer a fail at compile time for this. Like, that is a overriding concern for me. I'd be willing to pick a thing I otherwise like less if it comes with compile time failures for existing code.
Yeah. So we can actually reconcile Borja's proposal with compile time failures if we change the name. So if we were to use new names for these functions, that would be another way of forcing failure, because we're introducing new behavior, and so we use new names would be the usual way that I would force.
I would be completely okay with introducing new names and dropping the old names and make it so it's just a straight breaking change that way as well. I think the most important thing to me is that there's a breaking change, and I like the idea of there being I prefer the idea of there being ones where it's there's no possibility for it being partial, right? And then having if there needs to be partiality, having other ones which you can use where the partial comes into play, which I believe was something that Stefan had brought up at some point. Am I incorrect about that? Am I remembering something different?
Yeah. So August 26th, what I wrote was, after discussing this topic here with Sean today, here's a path forward that at least he and I are in agreement on. So that was basically, yes, we add, it was what you described. Copy from and copy to would become partial. We would add copy append and copy from append, which are not partial. There's no sort of ambiguity in their behavior and how they handle out of range, because the particular kind of ambiguity that we're dealing with here is not there anymore, because it always is appending to the end of its destination.
So,
and that's the function you would use in like every usage of the copy to that we have today in GitHub public, because they're all appending. And so there's no need to have complex, there's no need for that append operation to have complex logic that determines how you deal with different destination indexes being out of range.
Application is common elsewhere, isn't it? Yes. For things.
Sorry, I missed that. What'd you say? What's common elsewhere?
The truncating case is kind of common. We do that elsewhere for ranges that are out of range, right?
Yes.
So maybe Borjas, except that we rename copy to and copy from, so that it is a breaking change. The combination that you talked about, right? Where we square the two. I think that might be the most consistent and good.
Okay. So not partial.
Not partial.
Because yes, we have a separate variant for append.
Yep.
And we have a new name for copy to and copy from that forces a breaking change on users.
Yep. Okay. Does that feel right to you? I mean, I remember you pointed out to me, I believe it was in Zulip, many cases where the truncate thing is the common thing that we normally do, right?
Yeah. But what's weird, so this is the weirdness. When you're talking about the destination truncating, so all you care about is that the start of your destination slice is either within range or right at the end of the range, or like right beyond the range, like one index beyond the range, because we can expand the range. We can't leave gaps, right? So you can't go more than one beyond the range. But yeah, and that's where it's weird, because it's not straight truncation to be within range. It's like we're truncating the destination start, and then it's a question of how we treat the destination size. And this is what won me over in the earlier conversation that you and I had about making it partial, because the destination slice behavior is weird and doesn't really have a precedent like the other truncation precedent.
Okay, I remember that now. Yes, I think we should go with the partial.
Okay. And I still think that as well. I'm going to say that in a comment.
Okay. I would feel comfortable with telling Stefan that he could start with implementing that with the partial, and hopefully we can square it with Borja and bring him around. But in the end, we have basically two of three for people who've been invested in this, right? So I think we go over the two of three.
Okay. Given we also have two others here in the call with us, Red, Jason, any thoughts on this ticket?
From what I've seen, I mean, that makes sense to me. Although it's a pretty full ticket if you haven't been following the entire time. So
yeah,
my opinion does not matter that much because I have not been following the entire time.
Okay. Just like on a, what would you expect to happen if I call a method that's supposed to copy some, you know, number of bytes? Let's say, you know, you don't care where the bytes are coming from, but I'm copying some bytes to a particular destination, and my current array is only 10 units long, and I'm trying to copy it to position 50. What would you expect to happen in that case?
I fail.
Yeah, so that's the partial option that Sean and I just
talked about. Especially if it calls itself partial. Yeah. It seems like pretty straightforward. Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate when you're trying to like copy to ranges that don't necessarily exist, but those ranges just don't exist.
Yeah, like, and that's why we talked calling about calling undefined or
the like is just not good for high level arrays.
Yeah, so that's why we talked about having a separate method that always goes at the end, so you don't specify a destination index. Say just append this, then you don't have to deal with the partial case for the case of not needing to specify a particular index.
the most common use case?
I don't feel like that method is, I don't actually see the point in that method.
because it is the most common use case. It's in the standard library. And it's always safe if you're doing that one. And so we can provide you with a method to do that which isn't partial.
So the method is my least favorite
thing in the world is in Pony having to have like a partial call site where I'm like, this never actually happens. It's never raised an error. That's why my error handling thing does nothing. So ignore this. I hate doing that.
That makes sense. I would imagine, like, I would hope that it's more general in some sense. Like, ideally, for that kind of method, I would expect to take an iterator or something to that effect and just append that all onto the end rather than be arrays. But the copy to with arrays could be more efficient. So, I guess.
Yeah. And for context, if you look at all the places this method's used, it's always used for like efficient bulk copying. Yep. And we have another, I believe we do have another method that takes an iterator.
Yeah, so I think as long as it looks similar enough to that, I feel like copy append doesn't read clearly to me as a name, something like that, even though it's like, I would probably put that the append is the primary thing.
Yeah, well, we have... Yeah. Yeah.
You have an RFC. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, naming. So that can be discussed further than RFC, but I think, yeah, we've confirmed at least it sounds like it's intuitive that you want to have like a true error in the case of copying bytes from somewhere to a bad destination.
Yeah. It's less clear when there's like some overlap.
Yes.
That's the thing that's kind of awkward, because if you have one, like, it's a pain to calculate what the actual constraints would be. On the other hand, that's sort of the primitive operation, is just copying something that is in range, because then you can save on the computation if you don't need it, so to speak. So if it goes somewhere outside of the range, I think there's still probably some debate on whether to error or not.
Yeah, under the rules that we talked about, as long as it is possible to copy it to the requested destination without leaving a gap of undefined data, then it will do so. Because it will extend the length so that if your index is like equal to the size plus one, current size plus one, then you have a gap of one, and that's when you get the error.
That's like reasonable.
Okay. Great. Red, any other thoughts?
That is definitely a case to get an error.
So part of me is like, you know, you could have the partial methods and then have the offset defaults to the end. But then the disadvantage of that is that if you wanted to do an append, which is always going to be valid, right? So it makes a whole bunch of sense to have that as a non-partial method. So yeah, I think everything that's said here makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So I'm writing a comment. And we'll try to follow up with Borja to see if he can be on board with this consensus.
I feel like there's a good precedent here as well, which is if we find things that were written in the standard library, which are partial, which for some set of use cases, which is common, has a non-partial, has a way where it can be non-partial, we should endeavor to add a non-partial method to be able to handle those use cases.
Yes, I like that precedent. And yes, I agree.
I like that a lot.
Because I hate partial when it doesn't need to be partial.
Yes. It's like, hey, here's a case where we can't prove it to the we can't prove it over there to the compiler because it's big and broad, but here you go. Here's the subset one. Perfect.
Yep. I will confess there's a little part of me that when asked whether you should, if you try to insert something at offset 50 when the destination array is only 10, there was a part of me that was like, ooh, maybe we should do sparse arrays. And I was like, you know what? That needs to be a completely separate data type because the number of people that actually use sparse arrays is infinitesimally smaller than people who use actual arrays. And we don't need that level of indirection and inefficiency.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different data structure. It's a useful data structure,
But a sparse array still has a size. It still has a max size. Right.
Yes.
If I say, hey, here's an array, it's sparse and it has 100,000 elements, and I asked to add something at 200,000, I still wouldn't say that it's necessarily the correct thing to do to insert something at 200,000.
I could make an argument that you could use that to increase the size of the sparse array, but
I could make the argument that you should be explicitly increasing the size and then doing it rather than randomly dropping data in that you might have accidentally done as an error and not realize is there.
Oh, completely, 100%. Like, but this is a completely separate conversation.
Yes, it is.
All right, we are well past the midway mark. Does anybody have special topics to raise that they want to discuss here while we're together?
I had one thing. So Cirrus CI has compute credits, Joe, right? One of the things that you can use compute credits for is anything which is triggered by a contributor to the project, right? You can use compute credits to, you pay for the time that the thing runs and you can't be preempted. You're not waiting around for an instance to come up on the community node, et cetera, right?
Right.
We have $60 worth of credits, which are given to every account when they first introduced this. And we've never used those 60, right? The can't be preempted is the important part to me. And is that I think that it might be worthwhile because I have encountered this problem every now and then where when we're doing a release, I don't care about nightlies, just actual releases, where the job in question gets preempted and it gets preempted at exactly a very bad moment, which can result in some errors cascading from it, where if we were using compute credits for the release jobs, where we could keep them from getting preempted, and this would make it easier for folks if somebody's doing a release who's not me in removing the primary possible source of one of the primary sources of error. This would in turn mean, though, that we use some bit of the budget that we have over the course of time for credits for this. But if we only do it for release stuff, it should be a fairly small amount per year. I haven't sat down and done the math, but I can't imagine that we would be spending more than like $50 to $100 per year, probably, based on what actually happens for releases. So I wanted to discuss that as an idea.
Yeah, I think we should do it.
Okay.
Because, I mean, we have those credits that we already have. We have money in the Open Collective account that we're not burning through, right? This seems like a sufficiently frugal and sufficiently useful change.
So I will look into getting that implemented. It'll be an easy change just for our Cirrus CI release stuff, right? It eliminates a point of possible failure for releases. And we can see how long it takes us to burn through the 60, doing our normal, basically, usually we release once a month, right? Then after doing two or three releases, we can see how much is left. And I'll bring it up again to know for a more real idea of what the cost might actually be, right? Before we do anything other than burn through our $60, hopefully.
Okay. Great. So next up, any other special topics to raise? All right, then let's take a look at 4168, wrong code generation / memory errors in generic Lambda parameters. I remember this one. It is a haunting one.
I'm not sure there's really anything at this point to do other than it needs investigation we can take to discuss during sync-off, you know?
Okay.
I mean, we had a bunch of conversation around it during that period. And I don't think we ever actually we did discuss it on the August 2nd sync, and we just didn't take the discuss during sync-off. I think, needs investigated, help wanted, triggers release, bug, you know, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. 3580 UDP socket incorrectly maps sock name to localhost. My internet is loading really slow, Sean. So if you could kind of cover the summary of what's going on here, what the status is.
So basically, I changed this from needs discussion to ready for work based on the conversation that you and I had on September 2nd, Joe, right?
Okay.
Basically going with saying that what we discussed, because nobody else has done it, come up with anything else from that where they commented on it, that we go with what we said and that it's ready for work.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Let's see. We have net SSL. Update Windows Libre SSL version. This is ticket 75 in the net SSL.
Yep. I do not know enough about the I tried to switch the version for Windows. It gave me errors. And this is basically me punting and going, hey, Gordon, can you give this a try?
Okay. So we can leave a tag on that. Maybe Gordon will be in the next sync. We can discuss more of that.
Okay. All right. I'll put the tag back on.
All righty.
Okay.
I think that takes us through everything in the agenda. Any last topics before we wrap up? All right. Well, then thank you everyone for being here. And thanks for those listening along to the recording later. And we'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.